Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. It's our number 2 live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. I always say I would love to be general manager. If I did anything else in my life, if I'd have pursued anything else, if I could trade my job for anything else, it would be NFL general manager. So I'm going to have one, a former one on. He was Thomas Dimitroff for 13 years, director of scouting, all this stuff. So I have a lot of friends who are in the scouting world, and I bother them constantly. It's annoying, but it's my thing, and I have access to a handful of them. And so I love when we have Thomas on because I am totally into it, and
well,
Joy
you're
knows
a big
that.
Draft person.
I love the draft. I love everything about the draft. I
you
always
like
have.
Having some nuggets about the guys coming in.
I love it. It's my whole thing. I love it more than anything in the world.
I feel like scouting would be a lot of anxiety for me. Because not only are you evaluating young players and you're giving your recommendation, and you're going to be wrong. Like, there's just that's the inevitability.
Everybody's wrong.
Yeah.
All the time.
The sport and of the job. You're going to be wrong. So, like, you can only be moderately wrong. So you need to hit on some.
Yes.
And then, like, you could be wrong for the wrong reason. Maybe you got bad information from somebody. So it's almost like reporting. Like, you have to kind of source things out. You can't just take one person's opinion about a guy.
And, you know, Lane Kiffin and I had this conversation once. He's like, listen, he always laughs when he says, yeah, you take a quarterback from this school and it bombs. And people are like, I can't take a quarterback from that coach or school. And he goes, if you took a cornerback from Ole Miss and he bombed, would you not take any more? It's like, you get into these weird habits where, okay, that guy, there was for a while we were saying, like, Nick Saban's cornerbacks, don't draft him. Because he's such a great coach.
Or running backs. Or quarterbacks.
Yes. For a while. Because Nick is so great. He squeezes all the juice out of the orange. And by the time you get the player, there's nothing left. And it's like, well, I don't know. A lot of these Alabama quarterbacks and receivers are really good.
Running backs are pretty good.
So it's fascinating. I saw this news, though. The Seahawks fired Ken Norton, a defensive coordinator. Now, it's newsworthy because Pete Carroll and Ken Norton are tight. And Pete Carroll had to fire him. So I was told that Russell Wilson wanted changes. I don't think Pete wanted to do this, but since he gave Ken Norton the coordinator job, they've gone from 16th in yards allowed to 28th. They don't take the ball away. They're 22nd in sacks. I think the move needed to be made. But you know, there's the old saying, out of sight, out of mind. And I've made this comment many times before. It would be one thing if your enemy was doing way better than you. But you lived in Boise and he lived in Bangkok, out of sight, out of mind. But if he was your neighbor and he's driving up with a new Lexus or a Tesla or Mercedes and he's got a bigger house than you and all the toys, it's kind of in your face. Right? When you get a divorce, you'd prefer you don't live next door to each other, right? Especially if she's doing better. You'd rather not hear it, see it all the time. And it's like, I think this is powerful because we hear the story about Russell Wilson fuming at that Super Bowl watching Brady. He was in the press box fuming. He's watching Brady and all these weapons. And even though I think it's important for Pete to fire Ken Norton, I got nothing against Ken, but it wasn't working. I feel like Seattle's defensive schemes and offensive schemes have been outdated for years. But Pete's probably now just going to hire his old buddy, an old coaching buddy in his 60s. They still draft bizarrely. They've missed on too many top picks. They don't have many picks left. The offensive line was rated 25th. Running backs are still okay. The division's brutal. But I think more than anything, this is really tough, is that he looks around the NFL, and Stafford has McVay, and Kyler Murray has Cliff Kingsbury. And Aaron Rodgers has Matt LaFleur, and Joe Burrow has Zach Taylor, and Mahomes has Andy Reid. And Brady's got Bruce Arians. And I think he looks around the league, and he's a smart guy, and he looks at all these quarterbacks who he's in the same kind of, you know, galaxy. And outside of Josh Allen, they mostly have offensive coaches. And he sees what's happening in the NFC, where every single playoff team, every single one in the NFC, had an offensive coach. And I think it's just in his face. So I think all this stuff is, it feels like the inevitable. It's window dressing. I think, you know, his contract, they could franchise tag him, but his contract's up end of this year, next year, pretty soon. And he's a huge cap hit. So, you know, I could see Seattle. They don't have the draft picks to address quarterback. They'd have to go out and spend a lot of money and get another quarterback. But it's. I think what's happening is, I think this stuff is jammed in Russell's face. He's a bright guy. He looks around. He sees the changes. And he has a 70-year-old defensive coach and Mike Zimmer defensive coach fired. And Vic Fangio fired. And Ron Rivera can't figure out the offense. And Pittsburgh looks outdated with Mike Tomlin on offense. And I think he just looks around the league and it's like, Belichick now can't win his division. Belichick. So this stuff is tough. For Russell, I cannot see. I believe, I honestly do, that Aaron Rodgers has a greater chance of remaining in Green Bay, despite all the drama, than Russell does in Seattle. I could absolutely, if Aaron wins the Super Bowl, why would you leave? You complained. They listened. Apparently, he's had great conversations with his GM, Brian Gutekunst, and they win. And by the way, win in a year where there's all these great quarterbacks and coaches out there. And you can make an argument, Matt LaFleur, outside of maybe a McVay, maybe even with McVay, is the best young offensive coach out there. So I can see Aaron winning and just saying, bygones, bygones. Let's just rip my contract up. I'm going to end it here. I'm probably going to play to 41. I don't see him playing forever. I think Aaron's got a lot of interest. But it is interesting. The Russell-Pete Carroll thing is, I mean, you start looking around this league now, every NFC playoff team had an offensive coach. The best quarterback won every division. I've never seen that. Last week, the best quarterback won every game, except Dak Garoppolo, and I don't think the gap's as big as we all think it is, although I do like Dak more. So Thomas Dimitroff's a former NFL general manager. There's a lot of coaching openings, seven of them. What's the best opening? That and more. He's joining us now live. Let me address that to start, is that there are cultural changes in the NBA. You can't have two guys on the court, Thomas, that can't shoot. That's just the new game. In baseball, I need home run hitters. I don't care if you strike out. Cody Bellinger reminds me of Dave Kingman when I was a kid, and Kingman was considered weird and odd. Today, Dave Kingman would be exactly what I want, home runs and strikeouts. And I look at the NFL, and Thomas, every NFC playoff team, offensive coach. Half the AFC, offensive coach. Best quarterback won every division. How do I not, if I'm Chicago, if I'm Denver, if I'm Minnesota, how do I not, even if he has the second best interview, how do I hire a defensive coach, right? Like, tell me.
Well, look, you know, I was fortunate to be around two really good defensive coaches, Mike Smith first, and then Dan Quinn. Top notch, in their worlds, right? And they had so much to offer. And when you get into that role, Colin, when you're interviewing, you're in that process, you do get caught up in, let's get the best, you know, team maker. Let's get the best morale guy. Let's get the smartest, most intuitive football person. And that, you start to be really attracted to that. And you realize how important that is to pull a team together. Now, to your point, after having two defensive coordinators, and I love them both, my mind always started going to thinking about having, you know, someone who was in that building who was massively acute on the offensive side. You know, we see what Kyle Shanahan's doing out there. He does really fine work. He is genius-like. And organizations do want that more and more now, I do believe.
You know, it's interesting. Here's another thing that I with the Raiders. Interim coaches, we've seen this before. The players want to appeal to him. The players liked him anyway. They get hot for 6 weeks. They get in the playoffs. And everybody's like, I want our interim guy. And I'm like, okay, that's not the real world. I want the best coach. If a Harbaugh called me, he's gotten to a Super Bowl, I would have to take that phone call. What do you do if you're the Raiders? The interim guy's a good dude. Little lightning in a bottle. They won a ton of close games and overtime games. Doesn't mean a thing starting next year. How do you address that issue?
Look, Rich, to your point, Rich Bisaccia is a really good football coach. He's earned his time to step into that spot. Like you said, there's elements of lightning in the bottle. I understand that. He is a really good football man, and you can't just find someone that's going to react as well as as he does as a coach to all the players, and the players react to him. He has something special about him. My earlier comment about just offensive coaches or how people are looking at that, if they truly believe they can secure that, you know, just that guy who has everything as the offensive coordinator, then you pair those guys, and I think it's really important. Look, the Raiders have a lot going in their favor. They have good football players there. Yes, okay, you know, and I really appreciate Mike Mayock's approach. Things were tough there with John, of course, the way things happen. Right now, if you start thinking about a GM there, you bring in a guy like Ryan Poles, which I'm a big fan of when you bring in someone from a division opponent. You pair him with a guy like Rich Bisaccia to start with as you start thinking about it, or someone else, of course. I understand there's all kinds of thoughts about that. Ryan Poles comes in there as a good young GM, pairing with a really, really solid football coach, and I think you can make some major strides in Vegas.
I want to talk about the matchup between the Chiefs and Bills. And I don't think there's pressure on either team. Andy's made back-to-back Super Bowls. Nobody's getting fired if they don't win. If you lose to Mahomes, you're not getting fired. I don't think there's pressure on either side. I just think we're looking at transformational all-time quarterback talents. This could be Brady and Manning 9, 12, 13 years ago. Kind of your takeaway. I do worry that Josh Allen still needs to be sandpapered a bit. He can go up, down. Whereas with Mahomes, I kind of feel like I know what I get on Sundays in big games. I would give the edge to Kansas City because of that, but how do you view this game?
Man, that's your GM prowess, brother. I'm feeling it. I do agree with you on that. I think Mahomes, we know what he is. He moves. He's got an element of versatility, which I think is amazing. I think the Chiefs come back in really, really strong, really, really focused. I think Spagnuolo's got them operating on defense right now, and of course their offense is operating. You contrast that with a team like the Bills, who I love what they've done. I love what Sean McDermott's done. I think he is a hell of a football coach. I think the way that Brandon Bean has built that team, really what you have there is you have two head coaches and two general managers who are top-notch in this league, and that is ultimately why they are doing as well as they are. And, oh, by the way, their owners are giving them the keys to the kingdom. That is a very, very important thing, which would segue into ideal spots in the NFL for GM jobs.
You know, I want to talk about, I said last week, I thought the pressure was a little on Stafford and a little on McCarthy. One answered it, one didn't. This weekend, I don't feel a lot of pressure. I do think Aaron has been noisy. He's taken shots at vaccine people, media people, Packer people. Some of those people are going to want to take some hacks at you if you don't win. But it's interesting. When there was all this noise going on, I thought the Packers front office did a pretty good job to just lay low, let Aaron have his YouTube comments weekly, and just lay low. And there were reports. They did talk behind the scenes. Let's say they win. Could you as a GM just go, listen, Aaron, let's just rip the contract up. I'll pay you some guaranteed money. They don't have an owner, which I always think is a little bit of a negative. But can you do a bygones be bygones with Aaron and his personality? Let's say they lose, and that's going to create more drama. How would you handle this dance going forward with Aaron? Let's just say they lose. How do you handle it? Because you know you're going to get an offseason of more drama.
You'll get more drama. Hands down, this guy is one of the very best in the league and in many, many years. We know that. As a general manager, Brian Gutekunst, in my opinion, and I think Brian knows his stuff, Brian needs to sit down along with Mark Murphy, and they need to sit down with Aaron and do the bygones, to your point. There needs to be a discussion about that. This guy needs to go nowhere. He needs to stay in Green Bay and finish his career there for himself, for the community. That team thrives on this guy. We know where LaFleur is as a coach. He's a damn good coach, and he has really reaped the benefits of being around one of the best ever at that position. You got to keep this guy online there, in my mind.
Yeah, it is interesting. You know Belichick well. I talked about this earlier. Is that there's been such a cultural change offensively. Nick Saban admitted this in a New York Times piece about 2 years ago, where he said he had a conversation with Lane Kiffin and he just realized, I can't stop some of these offenses. Like, it's just the game's changed. And I'm watching Josh Allen score 7 touchdowns on Belichick. And I'm like, you know, it is interesting, is it not? Like, do you think we both grew up in a generation of defense wins championships? It's just not true anymore. Saban's acknowledging, I can't stop college offenses. Do you think Belichick deep down is having these discussions internally or questioning, like, does he have to make some pivots as a coach, as a personnel guy going forward?
Oh, yeah. I think we saw it this year, what Bill did and his approach, which I admire beyond, because it's not normally what you would see from Bill Belichick and some of the coaches that are similar to Bill. And believe me, there aren't that many that are. I think Bill, what he is so good about, and I remember back when he used to school myself and Scott Pioli and different people coming through there, John Robinson, who's doing a heck of a job in Tennessee. It was all about, you know your organization better than anyone. Everyone else can have opinions, but in the end, you know what it's about. You know how to build the organization. You know the players you have, and you know the money you have. Make your decisions. Be flexible. Don't get out there and spew it to everyone. That's one of the things we know he doesn't do. He keeps it private, but when he does things, he does it because he knows what's best for his organization.
Yeah. By the way, you're a 2-time NFL Exec of the Year. There's some GM openings. Are you applying for those jobs? Are you on Facebook, LinkedIn?
You know what? I wish I knew how to do the whole Facebook and LinkedIn thing. I'm trying to work on my social and digital. I'm watching closely. It's been really interesting watching it. And there are some good candidates out there for these teams, Colin. The interesting thing is, as you see, and we all know this, a lot of first-time guys. I got my chance when I was 40, and a lot of these guys are getting their chances, so that's good. We'll see if there are going to be any experienced GMs getting a revisit.
Good stuff. Great seeing you again, Thomas.
Thank you. I look forward to a call to see you out that way one day.
All right, Thomas Dimitroff, multiple-time Executive of the Year. And, man, there's a lot of movement, a lot of GMs. You know, it's funny. Like a coach, you're a position coach, then a coordinator, and then you become a head coach. You know, where do GMs come? You don't major in GM. Like, you're a scout. You're a regional scout. Then maybe you can be, like, director of scouting for your team. And then that can move you into it. But then that doesn't teach you how to be a capologist, to deal with the egos of coaches. Like, this GM stuff's a lot of work. I mean, you're finding Mike Mayock with the Raiders, and I believe this to be true. He did a lot of good things third round on. But in the first and second round, Gruden was saying, no, take that guy, because he had reportedly 51% of the power. Mayock had 49%. And so Mayock's resume now is like, oh, failure. Well, yeah, the first round picks that Gruden said take that guy are, but Hunter Renfro, Max Crosby, Raiders have a lot of good players later in that draft. So it's that's just another layer of being a GM, is what happens if you get Gruden. Belichick. You get a legendary. Now, Andy Reid's rare. Like, Andy Reid's like, Brett Veach, you go do it. Andy didn't want anything to do with it. I mean, he'll talk, but like, literally Andy tells the story is that Brett Veach kept coming to him, you got to see this Mahomes kid. Okay, show me the video. All right, get out of here. And then 6 months later, you've got to see this kid at Texas Tech. It's unbelievable. And I mean, Andy was like, that's your thing. And then they sit down, you know, 3 weeks before the draft and make a decision. But most successful coaches, you know, it's the old Parcells thing. If I got to make dinner, I got to shop for the groceries. Pete Carroll wants to say, Belichick just acknowledged this offseason. I'm not necessarily built to do both great. So Belichick, by the way, relinquished back to his scouts. This has been published, a lot of power, and they had a great draft.
Well, you can't be great at everything all the time. There's just not enough time in the day if you're fully focused on coaching the team. I do think coaches should have a say, because coaches know how certain players are going to work in their system and guys that they have. But, you know, it has to be a collaboration.
Yep.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Saturday, the NFC Divisional Playoff, presented by Intuit TurboTax Live, is on Fox as Jimmy Garoppolo and the Niners head to Lambeau to take on Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, only on Fox and the Fox Sports app. And Terry Bradshaw still has plenty of cash left, so Fox Bet Super 6 is bringing back Stack the Cash to give away even more of his money. Scan the QR code, download the Super 6 app, and enter the divisional round contest featuring Niners Packers for a free chance at the growing jackpot. Then invite your friends, because the more people who enter, the bigger the jackpot gets.
So I the other night I was eating a pizza. I ate a whole pizza. Mm-hmm. And I noticed after eating the pizza how happy I was.
Yeah, pizza, pizza tends to make happy.
Made me happy. You know, what I'm about to say, I think it's going to become the talk of the internet, and I'm almost sure it's true. But have you ever seen a table of skinny people laughing? I never have. There's a reason Santa is heavy. Because if he was skinny, he'd be neurotic and anxiety-ridden. And I was sitting there the other night, and I'm like, you know when I'm happiest? I've never once in my life said, oh, that pizza looks so great. I'll pass. Doesn't make me happy. It makes me angry. Because everybody else is getting the pizza. And I was thinking to myself, the happiest people in the world have a little more junk in the trunk. Just a little more. You don't see a lot of skinny people walking around, zippity-doo-dah, zippity-yay. I don't see it. I go around town all day. It's the people, hey, he could probably lose 20. That guy is smiling up and down the street. I swear to God, I'm true. Ask yourself this.
I don't know how scientific this is.
It's not, but the last time you passed up chicken parm and you literally were like, I have never been happier.
I ordered myself an entire pizza to eat myself for my birthday.
I had a cupcake the other day on the show.
Yeah.
Now I had a sugar high like a 9-year-old. But it was one of the happiest afternoons I've had. I swear to God, it's true. If you look at characters all over Hollywood, the funny, jolly guy is never the skinny guy. He's always the guy who's like, watch out for Slim. That guy Slim's got something going on. You can never trust Slim in a movie, ever. Always trust the guy.
Probably the jolly guy.
A couple draft beers at lunch, a little over the top, belt loops.
I think... To make your theory a little more practical,
yeah.
If you don't deprive yourself constantly of things that you enjoy, you tend to be happier. Everything in moderation, of course. But, you know, if you want to have a cupcake, have a cupcake.
Or two.
Or two.
Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news!
This is the Herdline News.
Well, following a loss to the Niners, Dak Prescott gave a little credit to fans who were throwing trash on the field as they left. Now, the story was initially that they were throwing it at the players, but it then appeared that they were actually throwing it at the refs, yeah. And he said he was fine with that. I'm paraphrasing, but he basically applauded the fans for throwing the trash at the refs.
Yeah.
Well, yesterday he apologized for his comments. He said, I deeply regret the comments I made regarding the officials after the game on Sunday. I was caught up in the emotion of a disappointing loss. My words were uncalled for and unfair. I hold the NFL officials in the highest regard and have always respected their professionalism and the difficulty of their jobs. That was a mistake on my behalf, and I am sorry. This was a bit out of character for Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott is usually
buttoned up at the mic.
Yeah, buttoned up, more above it all. He goes high most of the time. So this was actually a surprising comment from Dak Prescott to me. And he was frustrated, so I can understand that. But it's also was not the referee's fault that Cowboys lost.
I didn't spend a lot of time banging on Dak after he said that because I believe, unlike what Twitter believes, is we all make a big, stupid comment in our life at some point.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
Well,
and
I mean, your resume should matter.
He's got a good heart. He's a good leader. He was off a game. When he said it, I totally cringed. But the following day, I'm like, you know what? The kid gets everybody gets a mulligan. I know all of you on Twitter are perfect, but everybody gets a mulligan. He made a mistake. And this is why this is important. And this is why, and I've said this before, I voted Republican and would have no problem voting for a Republican. I DeSantis, very interesting. People in power have to be careful. Because if Dak, let's just say Dak doubled down and tripled down and quadrupled down on this. These officials are terrible, terrible. There are going to be a percentage of fans who hear that and they make it worse.
Right.
So when Trump's in a position of power, do not weaponize social media. You and I understand the game. But there are people out there that we have to kind of babysit emotionally. And you go to these stadiums, and there's about 5% of them that if you encourage them to do stuff like this, they would do it.
Yeah, you're inciting the mob.
So I remember years ago, I'm not going to call it the announcer. I think he's retired. There was a baseball announcer in the National League, and there was an umpire and a player bumped or something, and he kind of did not call out the player for bumping the umpire. And baseball stepped in and said, yeah, you better get that right. Because there are people listening to radios in the stadium. And when you're in a position of power, president, governor, senator, quarterback, owner, words have power because you are viewed. I mean, I would never look at a quarterback as my role model. I may be in the minority on that.
I mean, of course, yeah, you definitely are. It's why so many people were outraged at Aaron Rodgers this year. Because he does have a huge platform. He is considered somebody who,
intellect,
you know, we think is
smart.
An intellect and smart. And, you know, when you say things that are outrageous and you're in that position, people are going to hold you to a different standard
That's
than
right.
the average person with 17 letters after and numbers after their name on Twitter.
Right.
Like, you have a bigger platform.
Yes.
But I was disappointed in Dak. But because Dak has such a long resume of being the guy that he is,
That's exactly
it wasn't
how
anything to be outraged about. And he had no problem apologizing, which the thing about apologizing, which drives me crazy, is when someone does something wrong and they apologize, you're like, oh, I only apologizing because you got caught. Like, you only yeah, of course. Sometimes you come into yourself and apologize on your own, and sometimes you realize, oh, I offended someone or I just said something wrong, and I'm going to apologize. It's only like kids who don't want to apologize. It's such a weird thing. Like, you know, you're too good to apologize. What kind of person are you?
Yeah.
Did something wrong, you apologize.
Yeah,
where's the shame in that?
Resumes matter. I can disagree with a Drew Brees comment at the end of his career. I can disagree. But in both instances, Brees and Dak the next day come out and go, you know what? A little tone deaf, my bad. That's what grown-ups do.
Exactly. So that's we're all going to move on. But also, the main bottom line was they did not lose because of the referee spot. Like,
no, they
Dak didn't.
Dak didn't
play well. Mike McCarthy never should have called that play.
23-7 at home, trailing fourth.
They never should have been that game to begin with. So the Browns have made it clear what they expect from Baker Mayfield in next year, and they expect him to be back. But ESPN's Jeremy Fowler reported that an anonymous NFL exec thinks that they will trade him this offseason. The exec said at the end of the day, it's not a great fit. He'd be best in a shotgun, up-tempo offense like they have in Arizona. The Browns will get rid of the only good quarterback they've had in years and will fall into the same traps of the past.
I think if it was a great quarterback draft, I think if there were six Deshaun Watson level players on the market, they would move. But sometimes you just stay in a relationship because it's the best of a bunch of bad options. And I also think there's something to be said here that Baker will be better next year because he'll be healthier. And you don't know if at the trading deadline there's not opportunities. What if the Deshaun Watson stuff doesn't get solved until October 1st? And then he's available. And so, I'm not a Baker fan, especially now that Burrow looks to be a star in his division. But what are the alternatives for Cleveland? I don't see him.
I mean, you could do worse than Baker.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean.
And the Browns have. So, I mean, he has 1 year left on his contract. He'll make almost $19 million next season. There is something to staying afloat. Like, I think this is where the Steelers are. The Steelers might go for a quarterback in the draft and develop, and they have a little bit more runway than the Browns do
because
of the consistency of Mike Tomlin, and it's a well-run organization. But you can't just make panic moves. I don't think Baker is very good. And I think when you look at his career, he's had one good year.
Yeah, I mean,
that was 2020. Overall, the average of Baker is average. He's an average quarterback.
In 2020, Burrow got hurt. Remember, Ben was old and awful at the end.
Yeah.
And things fell into place. Oh, now Burrow's good.
Lamar Jackson's going to be back.
And Pittsburgh, you know,
is
always
Pittsburgh.
Yeah, so I mean, I agree with you. If 4 years, if one's good and three aren't, I'm going to err on the side of your play closer.
You say this all the time. What is the entirety of your resume? You can have one great year, one awful year. What are you the rest of the time? Average.
Yeah.
But for the Browns, and I'm actually not saying this in a disrespectful way, you have to build some consistency and culture in Cleveland.
Yes.
Like, that is the problem. Now, the other issue with Baker is, Baker, to the opposite of Dak Prescott, is always in something. It is always something with Baker.
And when
you don't have a good culture, that being your leader in the face of your organization
is tough.
Is hard because you're always having to fix something. You're always having to deal with him tweeting at a reporter or posting something on Instagram.
Like Cleveland Brown fans on Twitter, I know you think it's cool when he's snarky to the media. Let me tell you somebody that has a little insight here, like a good source around the organization. The GM and the coach hate it that they're constantly having to deal with snark fest, win the press. They're over it. Let me just tell you, in the organization, they're over that. They say publicly, we got his back.
Yeah.
They, GMs, don't want their quarterback arguing with the press every day.
Pick your fights. Pick your battles. I'm all for a good clapback, okay? But when it's worth it. Firing at the entire Cleveland media which, by the way, at this point, is kind of the only media that's still supporting you.
It is
the
only media.
Not smart. And there's other ways to defend yourself. Like, you can say, this report isn't true, or Stefanski and I have a great relationship, I'm looking forward to next year, without saying that someone's lying to put food on the table.
Yeah, come on.
I mean, like did you say earlier, words matter. So Charles Barkley has been quick to criticize the Ben Simmons Sixers situation, and he spoke with TMZ Sports and is placing the blame on the organization.
Well, you call the Boston Celtics, you call the Houston Rockets, you call the Sacramento Kings. I mean, there's some good trades out there, but the Sixers are being stubborn and just wasting Joel Embiid's great season. They're just being stupid.
Bleacher Report's Jake Fisher reported yesterday that the Sixers refused a big trade offer that they got from the Pistons.
Saw that.
Jeremy Grant, Sadiq Bey, Kelly Olynyk, and a first-round pick. The Sixers won a top 25 player in the trade. Look, I don't know what to do with the situation at this point. That feels like a good trade to move on from the situation. The sort of an albatross that's hanging over the organization.
But
at this point.
GMs always want to win all the trades.
You're not going to win all the trades. You're just not. And because you've let this situation deteriorate to the level that it has, I don't really see how. Because if I'm another team, I mean, it seemed like the Pistons, okay, like that makes sense. Bring in Ben Simmons, he's a star, he's a big name, like a good defensive player. But if I'm a contender, I'm not giving you a top 25 player for what? Why? I don't know what Ben Simmons is. Was he just going to wake up one day and decide not to play? Like, this is not a situation that makes sense for a contending team.
I could never trade for Ben Simmons. I've told you this.
No, I would not either.
I can't deal with indifferent athletes. I can deal with limited athletes who are passionate.
Yeah.
But I cannot. I will never, as a GM, acquire an indifferent star. I'm out.
Not a star. You can't. If you a middle-level player that maybe has potential,
off the bench.
Okay, like we can move him around if it doesn't work.
Not a face.
You have to invest in this. You have to make a big trade for this. You're stuck with him as a player. Like it just doesn't work. The trade deadline is February 10th, so they might wait until the offseason. Who knows? But it continues. I feel like Ben Simmons in Philadelphia and Dak Prescott's contract were like the two stories I've talked about the longest in my career. I'm like, this is never, ever going to end.
By the way, great example. I would much more invest in Dak Prescott, who's all in with limitations, over Ben, who's got none. I mean, really, he's an elite athlete, but I don't know if he loves basketball or just what it does for him. Like, I can live with Kirk Cousins because I know he lives for it. Like, I'm much more comfortable going, guy's got a ceiling. He is all in on this sport.
Yeah, it was reported yesterday that Simmons has no issue sitting out the rest of the season if he doesn't get traded, and he will get fined for every missed game, practice, and weightlifting session.
Do you really think if he loved basketball, he'd be okay with that? Do you think Steph Curry's like, I'm healthy, I'm just going to sit the season out? It's not the way guys that are motivated.
And, I mean, for what? Like, what happened that was so toxic in this situation that you're going to sit out the rest of the season?
He's the worst. I can't deal with him. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
We got that sound from Troy Aikman around the corner.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Mic check. Mic check.
If you want exclusive insight from the biggest names in the sports game, what's good? This is national champion and former pro baller Chris Johnson. Let me tell you a little bit about my new series, KJ Live.
KJ Live is the only show featuring me going one-on-one with the brightest basketball minds on the planet to get the real.
And when I say real, I mean that real. I got legendary Hall of Famers, elite coaches, and the top basketball insiders bringing you a unique perspective on all things hoops culture that you will not find anywhere else.
To make your next move your best move.
And tap in with me on KJ Live, wherever you get your podcast from.
Grizzlies Bucks tonight. Discover card key matchup. If you're a valued customer, credit card company will respect you. Exceptionally common sense. Discover.com/match. Limitations apply. The simplest answer is usually the right answer. I remember a couple years ago, and there was a lot of turmoil in the country, and a lot of sports radio hosts started talking a lot of politics. And Twitter loved that. Everybody, oh, yeah, I want to hear. And it's like there's a responsibility. And I remember going to the staff and saying, we're going to go deeper into sports. I'm a sports caster, not a politic caster. There are channels for that. And there may be opportunities. I had a day with Drew Brees. We talked about it. There's moments where I think stuff transcends games. But I'm a sports caster, and let's go deeper into sports. As the world's now all talking politics, they can turn to political Ben Shapiro and, Mark Levin, whoever does that stuff, Rachel Maddow, they're all very talented. And the answer was simple. We're sportscasters. I don't turn to Rachel Maddow for my college football picks. We're sportscasters. That's the answer. And sometimes the media outthinks themselves. Troy Aikman is saying that about football, is that all these coaches, it's scheme this and scheme that. And he said, listen, CeeDee Lamb was getting single coverage for most of the game against the Niners, and the Niners' weakness is corners. It's what they're going to address in free agency in the draft. And Troy talked about that on The Ticket in Dallas.
Back when I was playing, and I hate going back to that point because nobody cares, but what I see around the leagues, not just Dallas, it was in Philadelphia, I've seen it with a lot of teams, that a lot of these offenses, they want to scheme things rather than this corner is playing soft, he's scared to death, just run the route tree. Just run a comeback. Run a dig route. Run a curl. Run anything. And you're going to complete the pass whenever you want. Irvin would have had 10 catches at halftime if they had played us the way that they played CeeDee Lamb. The game's not that difficult. If I've got a great player at wide receiver and a corner is playing him single coverage, throw him the ball.
And apparently Aikman and Peyton Manning were talking about this. Peyton Manning's been really, really good. Peyton and Eli have been very good on the Manning cast. And Kyle Shanahan did it this weekend. Kyle Shanahan wouldn't go for it on fourth, like all the analytic people wanted. And my argument was, because Kyle Shanahan felt like Jimmy Garoppolo's hurt, there's limitations, Dallas is pretty good defensively, and I don't know if we can get into the end zone, but I'm not giving up points. If I win 12-0 on four field goals, it'd be different if I have Allen and Mahomes, and I feel a different confidence level. But Jimmy G, we've seen it in the past with Kyle. He'd rather run the ball. He'd rather run the ball and do play-action stuff with him, and then Jimmy's very successful. So there's no con. Analytics just want you to go for it. Well, if I have Justin Herbert, you know, I'm going to go for it with Kyler Murray or Justin Herbert or Matt Stafford more than I am Jimmy Garoppolo. And don't outthink the room. They're points. I've got Garoppolo. Dak's probably better. They got good, healthy weapons. I'm on the road. I want the points. This is the thing with analytics. One of the reasons I really liked the Phoenix Suns last year, and I like them again this year, everybody knows their role. You're not asking Chris Paul to shoot threes. That's not what he does. He can get the ball to guys who do it, and he's a great, great get-a-bucket mid-range guy, especially off the right angle. Just what Chris does. That's what he does. You're trying to turn Anthony Davis, a body five, into a four. He's shooting 19% on threes. It's not what he does. Westbrook, stop shooting threes. You're the worst ever at it. We're trying to turn, you know, people into what they're not. We're overthinking the room. We don't add context. When you get to playoff football, baseball, basketball, get me a hit, get me a basket, get me a stop, get me a tackle, get me points. Don't outthink the room. If you have single coverage and a great receiver... I mean, listen, San Francisco, there's a clip going out today. When Deebo Samuel came in for one of the last drives, he turns to Kyle Shanahan and goes, just bring it to me. That's right. I'm getting the ball to Deebo Samuel. I don't care what the play is. I'm going to run six plays. Five are to Deebo Samuel, and one's a decoy to Deebo Samuel. If you're the Rams and you have single coverage on Cooper Kupp, and you'll see McVay do this, he'll just keep going to Cooper Kupp until you stop it. He doesn't even care. He just keep going. If Derrick Henry, if you got small safeties and they're banged up and I have Derrick Henry, 12 straight carries. I don't care. That's been the knock sometimes on, you know, some of these coaches. They're too conservative or they take too many chances. Well, what's your personnel? If I'm 4th-and-2 with Justin Herbert, I got Mike Williams and Keenan Allen and Rashawn Slater's my left tackle. Yeah, I'm going to go for it in 4th-and-2 all the time. Not from my 18. But the slide ruler crowd, it's like, well, who is my quarterback? What's the coverage? What time in the game is it? I think this is my takeaway on analytics, is in the NBA playoffs, sometimes you're just like, man, they're on a 9-0 run. Get me a damn basket. I just need a basket. I don't care if analytically it's bad. I need a bucket. Chris Paul, Devin Booker's got an ankle sprain. He's lost his confidence this quarter. Give me a basket. I don't care if it's a three. Chris Paul, right angle, hit it, boom, stop the 9-0 run. That's what playoff basketball and playoff football and playoff baseball. Just give me a hit. I don't care if it's a ground ball. Just get bat ball. Get it in the outfield. So that stuff drives me nuts with analytics is we're not, I mean, Kyle Shanahan's one of the smartest people in the world on football. And he was like, not going for it, field goal, and he won. And by the way, if not for Trent Williams not being set, Dallas wouldn't have gotten the ball back. Analytics told you to do that quarterback draw, according to McCarthy. Well, the middle of the field, your enemy with 15 seconds and no timeouts. That's what I know.
In the postseason, you want to go to your guys. You can live with losing going to your
what's
best
your,
players.
What you're saying?
Players, not plays.
In the playoffs, it's players, not plays. Just get the ball to your... By the way, here's another thing analytics doesn't do. Some guys rise in the moment. Joe Burrow is literally better in big moments. Andy Dalton shrunk. I mean, like Jimmy Garoppolo, crazy town, he's often better in big moments. Kirk Cousins shrinks. The analytics tell you that. Some guys are... Brady is better with 2 minutes left than he is in the second quarter. Just how he's built. Hour three next.